Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hey, Changemakers. Welcome to another episode of Changemaker. I'm your host, Zina Muzika. I am here with a good friend and inspiration, Betsy Chassie. She's a mom, first and foremost, and she has two awesome kids, Laura and Max. She's a filmmaker. She has directed and produced What the Bleep Do We Know, among many, many others. And she produced the film Song of the Earth, which is a more recent film. And today we're actually going to talk about telling the truth. Betsy.
Hi. Telling the truth. So it's Song of the New Earth.
Song of the New Earth. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very
exciting. So I just have to share this because you'll appreciate this. Literally, as you started talking, this beautiful hummingbird like literally flew into my face, like right up to my face and like just sat there for as you were talking. And I'm like, oh, there's Zina.
Oh, thank you. I have so many hummingbirds on my property. It's been it's funny that that happened.
No, Yay. It's perfect.
So, Betsy, I love, you know, I watched one of your videos at Sedona. I can't remember what the event was called.
And Sedona World Wisdom Days.
Yeah, yes. Sedona World Wisdom Days. And, you know, you're a busy filmmaker, a mom, an author, a public speaker. You do so much. And you, in that talk, you said that you took a vow to tell the truth. And the theme of this podcast is the truth. And I worked with you on Wake Up, and you were very truthful all the time. You were just honest. You were straightforward. If somebody didn't like it, you're like, yeah, whatever. I mean, for our listeners who are maybe walking on eggshells around a boss or not able to tell or speak their truth because they don't feel that they'd be accepted, you know, let's talk about that. Let's give our listeners permission to tell the truth.
Yeah, you know, it started because after The Bleep came out, I was sort of like, you know, paraded around the world as being some sort of enlightened master because I had made The Bleep. Somehow I had all the answers. And, you know, I'll be really honest with you. For a while, I totally dug that. I have to say,
totally.
It was really cool to be flown to places and paid a lot of money to stand up in front of other people and tell them, here's how you would live this awesome life.
Yeah.
But there was a piece of me that always felt like I was such a friggin' liar. Like, you are lying to these people. You're making it sound so simple. Like, in three easy steps, you'll have the perfect life. And it bothered me. It really bugged me. And then, you know, what happens when I think we build a life based on lies, the life comes crashing down, which is what we all do. This is why we end up in crisis, because we've not built our lives on a foundation of truth to ourselves first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And so my life came crashing down. I got divorced. I went broke. Like, you know, the typical midlife meltdown basically happened. And what I realized at that moment was that I had an opportunity. You know, I was 41 years old. And I had done the program. I had gotten married. I had the white picket fence. I had the 2.1 children. I had done the story that we're all supposed to live. And it was a lie to me. And so I said to myself, you know what? I don't want to live lies. I don't want to live lies out into the world. And I don't want to lie to myself anymore about who I am, what I love, what's meaningful to me. And so I started to say to myself, no matter how much it hurts or how ugly it is, you're going to start telling yourself the truth. And you're going to start telling the truth to other people. Well, and sometimes it sounds really bitchy and blunt, but it's my truth.
No, but what was, like, okay, so being married isn't necessarily a lie. But if you're married to the wrong person and you're telling yourself it's the right person, but why aren't I happy, then that's the lie, right? Having the kids isn't the lie.
No, I think it's the way in which I went about it, like, it, you know, why I did it. I did it because I wouldn't be good enough if I didn't. I had to marry this person because no one else will love me.
Got it.
So you basically, my book is called Tipping Sacred Cows, which is all about the idea that we live our belief system. We see what you see in the world is filtered through. So you see something, it filters through your belief system in your brain and it spits back out a picture. So everything you see is based on what you believe. So if you believe that you're not worthy of love, then you're going to be, all that you're going to see is based around the idea that I'm not worthy of love. If you believe I will never be successful, then your job, you'll never go to get that big job. You'll never try for that promotion because deep down inside, you don't believe you're going to get it. And all you'll see is my boss doesn't like me. I never have the right. You'll keep perpetuating that story. Those are the lies that I'm talking about.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. And there's always, I mean, lies too are, I notice when I am having resistance from something, I'll kind of blame someone else, right? I'll be like, oh, well, I can't do that because so-and-so didn't get me the paperwork on time. Or, oh no, I wasn't able to accomplish that because blah, blah, blah. And I noticed that it was like, okay, well, if you take 100% responsibility for everything, can you, you know, you can't really blame anymore. So you can't really lie about that anymore. So you're totally in charge of your life.
Right. And that's a really scary thing to do because we love to
take it's a daily practice.
It's not pretty, right? Because we love to take responsibility for the good things in our lives. But, you know, one of the things that came out of the bleep was the idea that we create our reality. Now, some people took that a little too far and, you know, went all quantum and said, oh, we are manifesting machines, which is kind of true. But when I say, look, I create my reality, what I'm saying is that I create my perception of reality.
Yeah.
My reality is created based on my belief system. So I get to be in charge. So if I don't like something or if I don't like a person, then I have to ask myself, well, what belief are you carrying around that's creating that perception? And is there another perception? You know, Amit Goswami, my favorite physicist, talks about the sea of potentials, right? And that's this big quantum thing. But if you break it down to like, what does that mean to you and I? There is a perception for every experience. There's a million of them.
Yeah.
You're picking one. Yeah. So I begin to ask myself, well, why am I picking to see it that way? Is there another way that I could see it? And having that conversation with myself constantly and realizing, wow, I decided to perceive. I mean, like, perfect example. The minute I met you, my first perception was, oh, she's so much cooler than I. She's so much more beautiful than I am. She's so much more smarter than I am. She's so much more together than I am. Look at her. She's this, that, and the other thing, right? That was my first story. And so then I kind of, you know, was a little standoffish, a little harsh, a little abrupt, you know, that sort of like, all right, I'm going to put my armor on because I was telling myself that story.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you're so beautiful and wonderful that you saw through that bullshit story and was like, okay, Betsy, I know that you're putting on the armor right now because, you know, you have this story. And so I'm going to just, you were great because you leaped through it and you gave me the permission to see what I was doing. And that's also part of like I'm working on too in my own life is being able to encounter people and see their stories.
Absolutely. Yep.
And so you did that so beautifully for me. And then I was able to go, oh, why am I putting this whole crazy thing on this wonderful woman? And then all of a sudden, that story went away. And I saw this incredible person who was loving and supportive and helpful to me and cared about me. And I was like, oh, I am worthy of love. I am worthy of respect.
Well, I love the title you gave me, An Angel of Inspiration with a Swift Right Hook.
That is Dina right there because that's what you are. You know,
I have to tell my authors that when I'm like, okay, deadline time, guys.
Right, right.
So
that's being truthful.
Yeah,
that's being truthful.
Yeah, and we, you know, we got to spend like 2.5 grueling 14-hour, 15-hour days, you know, doing those first episodes of Wake Up, which I think we got to know each other really well in a very, it was like trial by fire. But I think the other thing I really like about you too is that you're really, like, you're forthright and you're provocative. Like, the stuff that comes out of your mouth, and I think for our listeners to understand, like, telling the truth also makes you interesting. I mean, you don't have to be pushy or mean or rude, but telling the truth, and that's what I like how you communicate the truth when you see it in the moment on the spot, and it makes you really compelling. It makes you fascinating. And I think that's what makes you a great filmmaker.
Well, thank you. I think telling the truth is a double-edged sword. because the first thing I have to remind myself is I'm just telling my truth. Mm-hmm. This is my opinion, my truth. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I always have to remind myself is I can't force that upon you. I can share it with you and you can take it or not take it. And that's entirely up to you. And I don't even take that personally anymore. Like I used to be like, well, they're not listening to me and they don't think
it's my truth, but it's my truth. Why isn't it their truth? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So now you have to let go of the idea like, well, this is my truth. And so when you let go of the idea that like they have to agree with you, it's also really empowering because then you're not looking for approval for anybody. So you said something once when I interviewed you, you said, I'm unapologetic. And that's really what I am. I'm not mean, although some people might perceive me as being mean, because one of the things that happens when you point out the truth is that people don't like it. And so they just decide to say, oh, she's just mean.
Well, but it's also a great time management tool, and it's a great tool to find who's truly like going to be compatible with you, right? You know,
well, yeah, because
if somebody can't take you, they're doing, you know, you're both doing each other a favor by getting to like honesty more quickly in a relationship. I mean, I have to say we grow out of so many relationships that we cling to, and it really occupies our mind and our lives. You know, there's so many people in my life that I had to say goodbye to at a certain point because they just weren't healthy for me.
Well, and here's the thing that I find fascinating for me. When I said, okay, I'm going to start telling the truth, I'm going to start being honest to myself and the other people around me, what I learned was that we're terrible communicators. I realized, oh my God, you are a terrible communicator. And then when I had a moment of epiphany when I thought to myself, God, you know, I don't know that I've actually ever had a real honest conversation with somebody, because what happens is I say what I say, you put it through your belief filter, you hear something completely different, then you say something back to me and I go, what the hell is she talking about? And then we have an argument.
Interesting.
And so what I realized was the best way to diffuse those situations was to first be clear about what it was that I was saying and why I was saying it. To listen to the other person, not just what they're saying, their words, but what's their intent? Like, is their intent really to hurt me? Is their intent really to be malicious and mean? Or are they just bad communicators? And once I sort of gave them that break, the other thing I started to do is I would ask questions. I'll give you a perfect example. This is a silly story, but it really is the best way to explain this. I was going out on a speaking tour for my book, and I don't love... I'm not the big go shopping kind of girl and buy dresses kind of thing. So I went out and I bought a dress. I bring it home. I put it on and I show my boyfriend, who kind of laughs and says to me, wow, I really like the cow thing you've got going on there. And I thought, okay.
Well, and the book is called Tipping Sacred Cows.
Well, no, I know, so. But that's the point. Wait, so I thought to myself, wait a second. He could have just said that I look like a cow. Now I could totally take that and run with that, throw off the dress, have a fit, no sex that night, right? Like the full on. Or I could do one thing that we don't do so often. I could ask him what he meant, because the truth is I know my boyfriend loves me and he would not call me a cow. So I just asked him a question. I'm like, Brian, I didn't understand what you meant by that. Can you explain it? And he's like, honey, the dress is black and white. It's got a cow print on it. And your book is called Tipping Sacred Cows. I was calling you clever. And I was, and of course it was great, but it was just simply one thing. Ask the question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't do that often. We just say, oh, he just called me fat. I'm going to stomp away and rah. And if we just stopped for a second and said, what do you mean? Can you explain?
Yeah, I love that. And it's true with everything, right? I mean, yep. I used to fear having to do employee reviews. Like, oh, God, they just killed me. They were so hard because I was scared to have to tell somebody where they needed to improve. At first, I love doing it now. But what I realized is I hated being on the receiving end of that. I avoided being criticized. I was scared of being criticized instead of saying, you know, and that would be a great tool. Like, well, what do you mean by that? Like, how can I actually take this and learn from it? So I love that concept of, you know, tell the truth, really listen to people. You know, what you're saying is, you know, realize that your brain has a filter on it that's shaping what you're hearing into, you know, the story that you're telling yourself, right?
Right.
And then ask people for clarification.
Right. And that's really compassion to me, yeah, because sometimes you have to tell somebody something that they, that's hard. You know, you have to say, I mean, I've had to fire people in my life. Mm-hmm, and, yeah, you know, I've, listen, it took many years for me to learn how to do it with compassion. I can guarantee you there's a few people that in my 20s who would say, she was a meanie when she fired me,
because, yeah,
I probably was.
I have that too.
but now, you know, I listen to somebody. And so I don't listen to just their words. I look at them and I go, well, what's so-and-so's story? You know, they clearly have some insecurity about their body or whatever it is that I'm talking about. And that creates compassion, because then I can hear them through their story. When they're saying to me something in defensiveness, in defense, usually we're defending our story. So if you were to say to me, well, Betsy, you know, you really need to work on your communication skills. I, as a filmmaker, you know, obviously want to say I'm a great communicator. I would say, what are you talking about? I'm a great communicator. And so I become really defensive. Mm-hmm. That defense comes from my insecurity of not being good enough as a filmmaker. So if you can see that beforehand, you don't engage in the anger that they're giving back to you.
That's great.
It creates so much of a better, you know, ease of conversation. And the other thing to realize is that you have to give it and you have to take it. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a situation recently where somebody was really critical of me. And they were really critical and kind of a really, I could have interpreted it as a really mean thing to say. It was not nice and filled with love and compassion, the way they said it, right? So, but I had to take a moment. So I listened to what they said and I let the filter run of, wow, that person was just really mean to me. And that was not a nice way to say it. And I went through that in my head. And then I said, well, wait a second. Let me really think about what they just said. If I take away the tone and their attitude, I hear what they're saying is actually being true. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, that, you know, I don't need to go after them for the way they said it. That's their inability to communicate. What they were saying was actually true. And I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea that, you know, we can take feedback. And it might not be communicated correctly, but the feedback, if it's good, it's good. And, you know, right, making assumptions, you know, you mentioned earlier about my, like, how you perceived me and having it so together. And I used to always marvel at how people would perceive me, because I was so messed up inside. Like, my whole life, I've always been very, very hard on myself. I still have my father's voice in my head that's always like, Gina, you're never gonna make it. Gina, there's no money in writing or tea or this or that. You know, I always had that, right, in my head, and I cruise around with it. And, you know, it's been interesting the how hard I realize people are on themselves internally, that, you know, the more positive I can be with them, the more they're relieved that somebody sees something other than what they see in themselves. You know, I'm not talking about narcissists who think that they're amazing, but I really marvel. I went to my first Vipassana 10-day silent retreat many years ago, like 2004, 2005. And I sat in this retreat, and there was a girl in the retreat that I named, let's see, what did I name her? Oh, skinny pretty. And skinny pretty snotty is what I named her. How very enlightened of me, right?
Right.
So I would go, and every day I would see her and I'd be like, God, she looks so good without makeup. And God, she looks so good in those yoga clothes. And at the end of 10 days, I had so many stories about her, you know, and how she would like, mm-hmm, hit her pillow to like fluff it up. And I'm like, oh, aggro. Why are skinny people so aggro? I would have all that stuff, right? And so at the end, when we could speak again, we all started comparing notes. And she came up to me and she said, I named you pretty, pretty rich girl. And at the time I was so broke. I had no money. I was only at the retreat because it was free.
Right.
And
that's so awesome.
And it's like we had these stories about each other, and she was going through a divorce. And that's why she was skinny, because she had lost all that weight from depression, from being sad, right? So,
right,
you know, we tell these stories about about the people that we see. And I love the idea of, you know, going story free for a while. Like, what would be an exercise people could do for that?
Well, I just want to tell you one thing that I thought was really interesting. So my daughter's 11, and like you have a daughter, and you have kids, and we always joke that our kids are like our greatest teachers because they just are so open and clear in what they're experiencing, and then you've had so much baggage put on top of it that listening to them is really amazing. And so my daughter and I were talking recently. And she was kind of telling me about how she feels and what she worries about what other people are thinking. And I said to her, listen, I have something to tell you. You know how you spend so much time worrying about what other people are thinking about you? And she said, yeah. And I said, guess what they're doing? They don't have any time to really think about you because they're too busy thinking about what you're thinking about them. So that's really what's happening. And she was just like, you know what? You're right. I'm like, yeah. I mean, you spent all that time worrying about what this girl was thinking of you. She was doing the same thing. So just stop doing that.
Exactly.
And engage and get to know the person. And that's kind of what Story Free is. And so for me, you know, I think it's an impossible bar to say I am going to go all day long without having any judgment or anything, because that's just hard, right? Yeah. But what I try to do, you know, during the day is just create a conscious awareness about what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. And then I keep a journal about it so that I can kind of see, you begin to see what your story is. So, you know, for instance, on the wake up set, you know, I had a lot of stories about how I wasn't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, any of those things. And I began to, instead of seeing specifics like, oh, I went to Zena to ask her this and she said this to me and this is how I responded. And when you get those responses down, you begin to see your own pattern.
Got it.
And then you begin to unravel it. Because once you know, oh, and to cut to the chase for most people, and don't just do the work because it'll be really fascinating. But to cut to the chase, most of our issues come around self-worth.
For women, I think.
I think men too. I really think so. Guys do too. Guys have the I'm not good enough, I'm not enough story.
Yeah.
Especially because guys are dealing with women who are emasculating them. I mean, listen, I can safely say that there are times when I emasculated my ex-husband, and I do it to my boyfriend now. Luckily, I've got a conscious enough a boyfriend to look at me and know that I'm not meaning to do that, but that's just part of, you know, I have 45 years of a programming system built into my brain. I'm not going to nail it all of the time, and nobody will. But if you can keep notes and be conscious and go, oh, so the reason that meeting didn't go the way I wanted it to wasn't because I wasn't smart enough and wasn't intelligent enough and wasn't prepared. It was because I was sitting in my story of I'm not smart enough and good enough to make this meeting go well. That's what happened. So now I'm aware of that so that I can be, next time you go to the meeting, you can say, hey, you know what? I am actually good enough. This is where positive affirmations, I think, are really great. I think people get stuck in the whole positive affirmation world because they don't do the work underneath. You know, in The Bleep, Michal Ledwith said, you can't have an entire pile of negative thoughts and then, you know, layer a teeny tiny thin top of positive affirmations on top of it. It doesn't work.
No, you have to believe it. For sure.
And to clean up. So when you get really, there's a game at the end of my book, it's called My Life Sucks. It's very silly, but it's very effective because you answer a series of questions. And as you answer the series of questions, you will begin to see what belief system is painting your world.
That's great. Well, and I find too, I had a vision. I've been working with a shaman lately, and I had a vision a few weeks ago in one of our sessions where my eyes were like a projector and mm-hmm. the screen was my life and my eyes it was such a strong visual because I realized I was projecting, you know, my perception onto the screen that is my life. So my husband can do something, and if I'm projecting something negative, I can see it as, oh, that's so annoying. Or I can see that as, oh, poor thing, he needs help, you know, or I could see it however I want. But what was interesting in this particular session was I saw there was a shadow between me and the screen, and it was a male figure, and it was AKA all the exes of my life, right? It was it was starting out with my dad, then going to my first husband who had the affair and you know, all that was just so bad, the bad man, right? And then there's the bad man who took advantage of me in business. Then there's the bad man that, and I, in this session, I just slightly, I just took the shadow and I moved it to the side. And the screen of my life, the projection of my life was really crystalline and clear. And I could see the whole thing without this energy. So now every time I have this story of negativity, like, oh, there's this bad man who's going to do this. Like, and Clarissa Pinkola Estes talks about it in Women Who Run With the Wolves, the bad man in your dreams. It's like a feminine part of our psyche. And, you know, I just keep moving it aside. So I think working on ourselves is really of key importance so that we can see clearly and be able to tell the truth. Because had I not started seeing the shaman, I don't know if I would have had a really intriguing and fun visual to move things around, you know?
Well, and the thing too is that, you know, we basically project our future based on our past.
Exactly.
And so it's important to be aware. So like I realized that, you know, I did get into unhealthy relationships with men. I did marry the wrong man. I have had, you know, business relationships with men that were skewed towards this belief system of I'm not worthy of love and I'm not worthy of success. So those are two kind of my big ones, right? So if I'm aware now of those two stories are still in me, even though I'm pretty good about sort of moving them aside, I can move a little slower. So I can sit with a man and have a business meeting and check in and listen to myself listening. So if he says something to me and that feeling of, well, here's where he's going to get you, Betsy, pops in, then I can say, well, wait a second, is that true? Or is that my story?
Because, or you know, am I letting it happen because it's my story?
Right, exactly. So you're aware of it because look, you may be in a situation where someone is going to try to take advantage of you. And if you're aware of like, well, I let this happen because it fulfills my story about I'm not good enough, you can stop and go, you know what? I don't think that's going to work for me. And you're in a much more powerful position. And when I do that now, when I'm in a negotiation, this happened recently on something, somebody tried to like sort of strong arm me in a situation. And before I would have reacted in a sort of kind of way, but I stepped back. I listened. I got really clear. I asked myself, what's happening? Is this something I'm interpreting or is this really occurring? And once I realized it was really occurring, my response was so clear. Mm-hmm. It was so empowered and it was so straightforward that it stopped him dead in his tracks. He was like, okay, I cannot play with this girl this way. I cannot play that game on her.
Yeah.
And it was empowering.
Yeah, it is. And that is the key word, empowering. And I think, you know, for so many women out there that are undercharging for what they're worth or not speaking up, you know, we're still making 77 cents on the dollar. All, you know, there are women, you know, being taken advantage of all over the world. I mean, at such a high and excruciating rate, same with men too. But I feel that if women were realized that the story is changing, right? We're no longer, you know, these suppressed, worthless women. You know, we're not just, you know, chattel, or we're not just breeding machines. Like in the West, we're realizing it, but then we're also burning out. You know, women are their story. So I feel that the first story that women and mothers and, you know, wives have to get over is that, you know, the balance between the male and the female, right? And then the other one is that women is having other women's backs. I think that the one thing to be empowered is to stop telling the story that women don't support other women.
I have a great story for you.
Okay.
I swear to God, this happened last night. So I'm out to dinner with my honey. I was going to do another radio show last night, and we went to dinner beforehand. And he went off to the bathroom, and I'm sitting there in this really nice little restaurant, and this beautiful black woman wearing this gorgeous dress walks in with another woman. Oh, she was gorgeous, except that her breast was completely exposed. Not intentionally, by the way. So she walks in and she sits down basically facing the entire... She's about to sit down facing the entire restaurant with her boob hanging out. And the first thing I think of is, why hasn't her friend said anything to her? Like, hello? And so I immediately go, like, I have to do something for this woman. And so I say to her, because she's kind of next to me, I go, wow, oh, God, you're gorgeous in that dress. And she kind of lit up and said, thank you. And I said, but you need to come over here right now. And she kind of looked at me a little strange. And I was sitting, she's standing, and she's right next to my booth. And I reach up and I grab her dress and I pull it back over her boob. And then I realized, like, oh, my God, I just totally touched this woman without asking her permission or anything like that. Because that's right. And she looks at me and she's like, oh, my God, thank you so much. And I said, well, no problem. I mean, you can't, you know, she's like, oh, my God. And she was horrified that she'd been walking around with her boob hanging out. And I thought to myself, you know, that's what we should be able to do with each other. But I'm glad that I was bold enough to do that, or, you know, because otherwise, she would have sat there the entire time. Her girlfriend is sitting right across from her, said nothing. And I thought, what's up with that girlfriend, you know? But that's what we have to do. We have to support each other and say, hey, you know, let me fix this for you. Let me back you up. Let me pick you up, instead of sitting there going, oh, my God, look at that woman. Her boob is hanging out. Oh, my God, she's such a slut, you know, which is what we normally would have done.
Well,
you know,
I think, too, I mean, we've gone from telling the truth to telling the truth. I mean, right. it's like telling the truth to strangers, you know, through acts of kindness and protecting each other. You know, I went to an all-women's college where we took a vow to protect other women. I mean, that was how we rolled. And ever since then, I've always felt protective, more protective of women. I mean, I've had to really get a hold of myself on my relationship to the masculine, because I am very masculine. I'm very active. I'm logical. I'm somewhat linear. I get stuff done. I understand limitations and all of that. But I really have had to, you know, tell the truth about my relationship to men. I prefer the company of women, but I'm not, you know, and it's been really, I've been really examining that lately, because somebody said the other day, they said, hey, Enliven Books, is that a women's imprint? And I looked at my list and I realized I had all women and two gay men. And I was maybe it is. I just find that I get along so well with the feminine nature. And I think that women, you know, because when we are empowered and we are more likely to tell the truth, but maybe that's just my perception and my story right now.
Well, I think you are, you know, I think you're a sort of beacon of light for that, because, you know, like I said, when I first met you, I went to that place where most women go, which is competition. Mm-hmm. You know, competition, survival of the fittest. You know, there can only be one of us here, and I'm going to win, and now I'm going to judge. And that partially is created because of the way in which our dynamic in society is set up, you know, which is that, you know, it's often been, let's let the women compete, and let's, you know, they, in order to survive, literally, in some cases, you know, you have to win, basically. And so it's like, well, there's only enough room for certain one or two of us here, so the rest of you are going to go, especially like in a business environment, you know, in a company where it's like 70% men, you know, you had two options. If you supported the other women, you were going to lose, because they were only going to have a few women in the room, and you had to fight to the death to get to the boardroom. And that's really changing. And I think, you know, women like you, and hopefully slowly women like me, are saying, you know what, I actually don't need to fight to the death with you. Let's get together. Last night I did a radio interview, and there's this girl on, and she's the most, she has the most beautiful voice. She was a singer. And it was me and her and a room, like seven other guys, all in the show. And it was so funny, because they're all talking about how beautiful she is. And I looked over at her and I said, I want to make a music video of that song. And by the way, you're really great. And we sort of like building this whole relationship around support of each other, while the guys were still talking about how cute she was and how great her voice was. We were like, all right, let's do that. And let's do this. And let's do this.
If your engine was breaking down, would you take it to a mechanic 15 years later? So if your knee is hurting, why wait years to fix it? Because the earlier you seek out help, the more options you have. At the Cedars-Sinai Orthopedic Center, our minimally invasive techniques allow many of our patients to be back up on their feet and go home within 24 hours. So trust the number one hospital in LA for joint replacements. Call 1-800-CEDARS-1 or visit our website.
At National University, you don't just get a degree in cybersecurity. You get a degree in
stopping bad guys,
helping me sleep at night,
keeping our retirement account safe,
making sure my identity stays mine.
We know it's not just the degree, it's the degree to which you use it. Keep people safe with an NSA-recognized master's in cybersecurity. Learn more at nu.edu.
National University for the greater.
You're listening to Changemaker with Zena Musica.
I had a conversation it was similar. I had a conversation the other day with somebody about, and sorry for our listeners, we're going off a little bit on a tangent, but I knew that Betsy and I would do a good tangent, so that's why I'm letting us go there. But the other day I was thinking about women in business, and I was saying to this guy, I was in a meeting with a man that wanted me to come on as a partner in his company, and it was him and another guy and two other guys, so four guys and a woman. And I was saying, yeah, I said, you know, I really, you know, any business I do, anything I do, it has to have a mission to help women become more empowered and to help children and you know, make the world a better place. And I said, I'm very mission driven that way. And I said, there's a lot of darkness in the world that needs eradicating. And how will this business help do that? And he looked at me and he said, well, darkness is just, you know, the world's always going to have darkness. It's always going to have balance. You know, that it needs darkness for balance. And I said, well, I don't know about you, but is ISIS balancing out something in you? Like, hello, like, you know, right. This is unacceptable darkness. Like, this is darkness of the most horrid evil you can imagine in humankind, what they're doing to innocent people. I said, how is that balance? I said, and he looked at me and he goes, well, and I said, and have you noticed it's all men doing it? I said, there's a few women who are following along, but, and he goes, yeah, well, you know, guys, you know, and I go, do you think if women were in charge of Iraq, Iran, Israel, the Middle East, like Russia, the Ukraine. I said, do you truly in your core believe women would be allowing this to happen if they were running these countries? And he looked at me, he said, no. And I said, that attitude is the only way to get me into your business.
I love that. I mean, I have one adjustment to that.
Yes.
Because I look right now at like, I look at Hillary, right? And part of me goes, oh, it'd be great to have a woman president. But I had a really interesting experience occur. I was doing a workshop with a very good friend of mine, one of your authors, Kate Montana.
Oh, yes.
We were doing a workshop together, and she has this really cool exercise that she had. It was all women, and that she has all the women do, which is basically she gets these big sheets of paper and she writes masculine on one and feminine on the other. And then she asks for you, the participants, to begin to share the qualities of each, like qualities of masculine, qualities of feminine. And she starts writing them down. And what started out as like this really interesting conversation literally turned into a man bashing contest, because all of a sudden, all the masculine qualities were these negative, harsh, brutal, abusive things. And the feminine, of course, was all wonderful and flowery. And so we stopped the exercise and I looked at the women in the room, and they were all, you know, older, meaning they'd all had kids. They were all in their late 30s to 60s. And I said to them, how many women in this room have raised sons? And about out of the 20 women that were in the room, I would say at least 12 or 13 of them raised their hands. And I said, I just want you to know that that is the paradigm that you've raised your son in. If that's what you think the masculine is, then don't come to me and be angry as to why men are the way they are.
Well,
we have to.
I agree. I mean, I have a son and a great husband, and I love and I have twin brothers, and I love the masculine. I just think that the masculine, when it's not balanced with the feminine, runs rampant and can go dark.
Absolutely. But my thing about Hillary is that Hillary is a product of the patriarchal paradigm, in that, you know, I think that Hillary, and a lot of women had to let go of what you're talking about, that kind of woman that you're speaking about, because I look at Hillary and I go, you know, I don't know if Hillary would be that kind of woman. I think she's really steeped in the patriarchal masculine paradigm of what it's like, be a woman, but be a woman that's more like a man. And that's the paradigm that we have to shift, because that's what a lot of women go for. I mean, I know I was a line producer for, you know, 15 years, which was very typically a man job. You know, typically it was a production manager was a man. I was constantly in rooms full of men, and I had to adopt an extremely masculine persona. And for me to bring in my feminine was either I was weak and incapable, or I was using my sexual powers to manipulate. And so that was a program. And I'm really grateful that somewhere in the last 6 years, I had, part of being my truth was that I had to face that. It's like, well, I'm not actually truly honoring my feminine, and I'm not actually truly honoring my masculine, because I'm just playing this story of what it's supposed to, what it looks like to be a strong woman in a man's world.
Agreed.
And what we really need to shift is really to get women like what you're talking about, who are comfortable with both of their archetypes, the masculine and the feminine.
Absolutely.
And that's the, when we find women like that, and when we find men like that, then we'll have the kind of world you're talking about.
Absolutely. And we know plenty of them. And it's really, I mean, the theme of this podcast is to tell the truth. And I feel that the truth in the world is that we are grossly out of balance between the male and the female, which is leading to, you know, all the things with climate and right. all the things with nature. I mean, I don't know about you, but this is the hottest summer I've ever experienced in my life. And I feel if the grandmothers were in charge of the corporations, you know, or at least were on the in the boardroom helping, you know, stave off the choices, you know, that have these
absolutely
consequences. I think that, you know, like the old, I don't remember what tribe it was, but a Native American tribe, I think it was the Lakota, the grandmothers sat in on the meetings and helped them and basically helped the men. They were in charge of the men. So their sons were running the tribe, and the grandmothers were running the sons, and that was balanced.
But think about it now. Aging is a bad thing. You know, it's like almost like women who, it used to be that women who went through menopause shifted and became the wise people, because the wise women, because we had gone through this experience, we had given birth, we had cultivated these children, and once you went through menopause, it was like you finally had that last piece that sort of set you into this space of really being connected. And that's why the grandmothers were revered, because
I agree.
I mean, it was a major rite of passage, and now it's like, oh my God, I'm going to go through menopause. I hate that. It's so horrible. And it's like, no, it's the final rite of passage to becoming a woman.
Yeah.
It's your final gift.
Yeah.
And we
I
don't
agree.
See it that way. Our society doesn't see it that way.
Oh no. I wrote a blog when I was turning 40 about how nobody talks about age until you're 40. So I was like, okay. Right. So it's like, it was like the age issue of Vogue or whatever. And there's like a 26-year-old on the cover. It was Blake Lively. And I remember thinking, well, why isn't there a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old on the cover? Like, what is like, it's so hard to find a place that celebrates women who are aging. And then I realized, too, it was like, so as soon as I turned 40, people go, oh, really? You don't look 40. You look great. I would get that nonstop.
Where
it's like, oh, wow, you don't look, oh, mom, you know, even Sage, oh, mom, you don't look 40 at all. I'm like, what's wrong with looking 40? Isn't that okay? I'm 40. Like,
My son always says to me, mom, you look 27. And I said, I don't want to look 27. I want to be 45. I love being 45. And you notice when they do put those women in those magazines, it's always what you're saying. Don't they look great for being 50?
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? How about let's hear about their wisdom at 50.
Another story that we're telling ourselves. And, you know, Time Magazine this week had an article, a cover article. It basically said you have to get plastic surgery or you have to get treatments because everybody's doing it. That's why people feel like they have to, because if they don't, they like the people who don't will look weird compared to because everybody else is. Do you remember that Twilight Zone where the woman, like you never saw her face? You never saw anyone's faces, and she thought she was so ugly, and she had to have surgery, and then it revealed everyone's faces. They all had pig noses, and she was the beautiful one.
I do remember that. It was awesome. Well, and think about it. If you look at those pictures of the tribes of the grandmothers, those grandmothers had boobies down to their knees. And they had rolls. They had wrinkles. And they were considered beautiful. I have an issue right now with my daughter. I can't go into it too detailed, but she's got someone in her life who's telling her that she's too fat.
Oh, and, that happened to me. Oh my God, that was damaging.
I look at her and I'm countering it heavily, because you know what? She's not super skinny. She'll never be super skinny. It's just not her body type. She's going to be tall. I don't know where she got the height from, but this girl's going to be tall. She's going to be like 5'8" or 5'9". I guarantee it. Just where she's at right now. And she's friggin' gorgeous. Like,
she's,
you look
beautiful.
At this girl.
Allura's
she's beautiful.
She is.
And I'm showing her like all this stuff about, you know, women and what's coming out now with the Love Your Body. And I kind of dig Meghan Trainor because she's a singer. She's got some great songs.
Yeah, I love her.
And, you know, it's like countering this program that you have to be skinny to be beautiful. And you know what's funny is like, well, how many hundreds of years ago? It wasn't even that long when big and voluptuous was beautiful. And I've been showing her those sort of history of like, look, first it was women skinny, then it was women fat, then it was women skinny. I said, honey, don't get caught up in whatever the current fad is. Just be you. And if you, that's sort of part of my being truthful. Like, I had 2 C-sections. I have the squishiest friggin' tummy on the planet. And sometimes it bugs me, but for the most part, I just am like, this is who I am. My boyfriend loves my squishy tummy. My son says to me all the time, Mommy, I love your squishy tummy. I mean, he literally comes and puts his head on my tummy. And I think to myself, you know, that's what it's there for.
Yeah, and she's Allura is swimming upstream. I mean, my father told me I was fat when I was little. And then I also got bullied for being the fat girl. And I have to say, I'm still affected. I am 40 years old, and I wish, and I mean, I'm a transformational leader. I write about positivity. I am still affected by that. And it's a constant conversation, but here's the one thing that takes that conversation away. The one thing in my head that removes it. If I'm exercising, and I'm healthy. I don't have to be skinny, but if I'm exercising and getting oxygen and stretching out my muscles, that conversation goes away. I think that being active and being present in your body and getting oxygen into it is the only way to offset what society is doing to us, because the confidence goes up and like, you know what? This is my body shape. I mean, I have had lots of plastic surgery. I've never admitted it before. I mean, I have with all my girlfriends, but I'll never forget because I was called thunder thighs growing up. I went straight, you know, as soon as I got enough money, you know, and I was more successful, I went and got my thighs liposuctioned. And I have to say, it didn't even work, by the way. They were just bruised and I couldn't touch them for like a month and a half and it hurt really badly. But I was just like, I was willing to do anything to not have that voice in my head calling me thunder thighs the way that the kids did in school. And I have to say, it is such a challenge. And for us to tell the truth about that and to actually move through it, we have got to change the conversation. And it's going to take more than Dove throwing plus size models in underwears on you know, TV. It's got to be more than that.
Although I'm giving them credit. I'll give them credit.
Oh, I love them. But, you know, I'm just saying it's got to happen. It can't be the...
It has to happen at home.
It's not a spectacle, right? They're making it a spectacle. Right. Like, oh, you're beautiful too, but there's only 5 of you and there's 10,000 skinny people, you know, around them. You know, it's like, it can't be a spectacle. It has to be a comfort level. So aging...
But it also has to start at home. Like,
with parenting.
I had a realization that I hated my body. And I had this little teeny tiny baby she's around 2 or 3 when this began for me. And I'd wear overly big, heavy clothes and big flowy shirts. And as she grew older, I noticed her always gravitating to that kind of stuff. And I realized, oh, I'm teaching my daughter to hide. And so I just said, you know what? I started walking around the house. I started showing her my body. I started telling her what my body looked like. And I started dressing like and making my – I was like, you know, I can wear that dress. Yes, my stomach isn't perfectly flat, but you know what? I'm damn gorgeous in it, and I'm going to wear it. And I started dressing up and putting on clothes and stopped wearing the sweatpants. And all of a sudden, my daughter, who hated – like would literally stand in the dressing room crying. All of a sudden, within about 6 months of me changing the way I went shopping, she changed the way she went shopping. And that's what it took for us. And you know, I think too that people, what's so beautiful about what you just said is that you said, you know, I'm a transformational leader. You are a transformational leader. And the fact that you're telling the truth. I sat here a few days ago with a young documentary filmmaker who's out making some documentary.
Hey, sweetie, I think your phone is your phone next
to me. Oh, are you there?
Yeah, hold on.
Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Okay, there you are.
Are you there?
Oh,
so I said.
What's happening?
I don't know. Wait, let me.
It's getting worse.
Wait, let me do one thing. Hang on.
I'll have my producer edit it out.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, honey.
I don't know. Sometimes my headset. Anyway, I had this young documentary filmmaker sitting in my house. I was mentoring her, and she's out interviewing like all the big gurus about, you know, all the same old gurus. And I said,
the same old gurus.
Right. I said to her, you know, well, look, these guys and ladies, you know, they're people too. They have emotions. And she's like, she mentioned a very specific, very famous one. She's like, I think he's fully mastered enlightenment. And I'm like, no, I've had dinner with him. Trust me. He can be an asshole. And she was shocked. And I thought, this is what's wrong with sort of, I think part of what's wrong with the self-help movement is there's these, you know, these people put these gurus on a stage and on a pedestal. And so we need transformational leaders like you that go, you know what? I've tried plastic surgery. My life sucks sometimes. I've screwed it up half the time because that's truth. And that was part of why I wanted to start telling the truth is because I got really tired of walking around on the stage pretending that my life was perfect when, you know what?
I am so celebrating you right now. It is so true. I love that because I have to say too is that they end up exploding on the inside, right? Like I know a lot of transformational leaders that are like Jack Canfield, for instance. He's awesome. Like he's the real, like, and Gay and Katie Hendricks. Like I see them in all these different contexts. They're always who they say they are. They're very honest about what works, what doesn't work. I mean, And then there are those who are like, you know, they're one person on stage and an entirely different person. I was at a transformational type organization. You know, I was keynoting at one, and the guy, the producer, who pretended to be like this like major meditator, and oh, he was so like into everybody's, you know, he literally took off his dirty shoes and handed them to his assistant and said, Here, take these, so he could walk out on stage barefoot. And I thought, you don't hand somebody your filthy flip-flops, you know? Like, I wouldn't do that. Like, my kids don't even do that. So I think the truth of the matter is that we all need to tell a story that is, or stop telling stories and start telling the truth. And so we've got to leave our listeners with a couple thoughts. You know, I would say the summary of what I've gained so much about this, besides, you know, exposing a little bit more of myself than I normally have, is that I just love this commitment to tell the truth and to understand what's a story and what's not a story. Also, the way you said, you know, some people just aren't great communicators, but what they're saying is good. So to really listen.
Right. Well, and to just check in with yourself, like, you know, the whole idea of talking to yourself. I talk to myself all the time.
Oh my God, me too.
and just to really, because our brains are running on autopilot and you have to interrupt that thing. You have to say, whoa, 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 cowgirl, slow down. Let me check in here. I'd like to reprogram for a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Because we are on autopilot. By the time you get to be like 30 years, 35 years old, you're almost, there's no new data coming in. You're just repeating old data until you stop and go, okay, no. I'd like to insert some new data in here. Then you can actually start having real conversations. You can start telling the truth without fear because you know where that fear is coming from. And then you can start truly living the life, your life.
Yeah, agreed. I love it. So for our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. I know this was a longer than usual podcast. If you made it this far, you get truth brownie points, and you can find Betsy at betsychassie.net, chasse.net. Her book is Tipping Sacred Cows. One of her bigger movies was What the Bleep, and then Song of a New Earth is more recent. And you're going to be working on a coaching movie, right?
I'm doing a documentary about the coaching industry, and I'm also doing a documentary featuring an author named Jarvis J. Masters, who is on death row right now, and his story of finding freedom and really examining the question, what is freedom? Because he found Buddhism, and he's probably in his heart and in his mind more free than most of us are.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Betsy. I love you more than ever, and I appreciate you and your commitment to telling the truth. It's truly an inspiration, and I'm going to go tell my son the truth about his room. So
yeah.
For all of you, thank you so much for joining us on Changemaker. You can find me at Twitter at Mistress of Tea, on Facebook at Xena as well. You can find Betsy Chassie anywhere. She's everywhere, and she's very active with social media, so keep the conversation going. And I hope this was helpful to you in changing your life for the better on an ongoing daily basis. Thank you so much.
At National University, you don't just get a degree in cybersecurity. You get a degree in
stopping bad guys,
helping me sleep at night,
keeping our retirement account safe,
making sure my identity stays mine.
We know it's not just the degree. It's the degree to which you use it. Keep people safe with an NSA-recognized master's in cybersecurity. Learn more at nu.edu. National University, for the greater.